The Sedra this week begins with events that happened after next week's Sedra. This week records what happened in the second year after they left Egypt, in the beginning of the second month. Whereas in the middle of next week's Sedra, we have the erection of the Mishkan, the consecration of the Mishkan, and the sacrifices that were brought by the heads of the tribes from Rosh Chodesh Nisan of the second year, which is the first month. So the rabbis ask, why are the events of the second month of the second year precede the events of the first month of the second year? And from here we learn the rule that Ein Muktam Ma'ucher BaTorah. There is no necessary chronological order to the Torah. Torah doesn't necessarily follow a chronological order. That does not mean to say that the Torah just haphazardly records things out of chronological order. Under normal circumstances, the Torah follows a chronological order of events. But where it's necessary, and to teach us a lesson, or to bring out a point, then the Torah will sometimes deviate from the chronological order of things and give it in a non-chronological order because the message is more important than the history. That's the case, then we have to understand why did the Torah here choose to tell us something out of chronological order. Why did the events of this week's Sedra, which are the census, counting the Jewish people, each one according to their individual status, their family status, their which tribe they belong to, and the separation of the Jews into different camps around the Mishkan, right? Three tribes on this side, three tribes on the other side, three tribes on the third and fourth sides, the Mishkan in the middle, the Levium around the Mishkan, each one with their own degel, their own flag and banner. Why was that more important to tell me that before it told me about the Mishkan? Right. This was all after the Mishkan was erected and consecrated, and then they began to dwell around the Mishkan. So first tell me about the Mishkan, then tell me they dwelled around the Mishkan. Why tell me first they dwelled around the Mishkan, and then tell me about the Mishkan? Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky asked a question, and with the answer to that question, I think we can answer our question too. Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky asked the following question. Says that the Jewish people, it says, were at Har Sinai already, saw that when the angels came down with God to give the Torah, the angels were separated into different camps, each one with their own banner. There was the camp of Michoel and the camp of Gabriel or whatever. And the Jewish people wanted very much to have their own camps also, right? Their banners and their separate groups. So why did God wait until the Mishkan was erected to break the Jewish people up into these various camps and not do it immediately? They had a whole year in the desert where they were not separated into camps. Says Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, this idea of being separated into various camps could lead to tremendous disunity and machlokas. Everybody competing with everybody else and vying with everybody else. So until there was one central thing that everyone could unify around, they couldn't be broken into separate camps. But once the Mishkan was erected, and they had that one unifying factor called the Mishkan, now the Jews could be separated into individual camps and still maintain their unity. But they had to have something to unify around. That's his question and answer. Based on that, I want to say the following. If therefore I were to ask you, what is the goal and what is the means to reach that goal? Was the goal the Mishkan, to have a Mishkan? Once there's a Mishkan, the Jewish people, what's it called, settle around it and are split into various camps or whatever, or no? The main goal is that the Jewish people should be able to have these separate camps. But in order to enable that, you needed a Mishkan. from what Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky said, it seems like the second way is the proper thing. Really, the purpose was that the Jewish people should have something to unify them so they could then bring out their individuality. But in order to do that, you had to have a Mishkan. So it wasn't that the Mishkan was the goal and purpose, and once you had a Mishkan, the Jews had to dwell around it the way that they did. No. In order to enable the Jews to dwell around something that unified them the way they did, they had to have a Mishkan. We have a rule, Sof Maaseh B'Machshava Tchila. Whatever happens last, but in the Torah sometimes the goal is put before the means. In other words, this is the goal. This is what we're working for. The way to reach it is X, Y, and Z. Now, usually that doesn't follow chronological order. It's the opposite. The goal, right, is later. You reach the goal, and the means come now. But the Torah first tells us what the goal is before it tells us what the means are. Therefore, what was the goal? Like we said, the goal was that each Jew should have his individual place and should have their own banners and their own, what's it called, individuality. But in order to do that, there had to be a Mishkan, which in fact was the continuation of the giving of the Torah. The Torah was continued to be given in the Mishkan, so God's presence on Har Sinai devolved in the Mishkan. So it was God and the Torah that the Jewish people rallied around, which enabled them then to be split into separate groups and bring out their individual unique characteristics. But the goal was that everybody should be able to bring out their unique characteristics. The means to do that was the Mishkan. So therefore the Torah speaks first about the goal, the Golim, the counting of the Jewish people, each one separately, each one in their little groups with their own banner. And then it tells us, well, the means to achieve that was consecrating the Mishkan. That's why the goal precedes the means. Therefore, the Golim brought out the individuality of the Jewish people. Right? On the one hand, when the Torah was given, they had to have something that united them and that continued to unite them. Otherwise, breaking up into individual things could be a danger. But once they had that unifying factor called the Mishkan, which was, in fact, the continuation of Maimed Har Sinai, where the Jewish people were Ke'ish Echad, B'lev Echad, like one person with one heart, then they were able to bring out their individuality. Okay? And that's why, at this point, they were counted. Counting shows that every individual is important. It's not just the sum total of the Jewish people that's important, but every single Jew is important. And every Jew has a place in Klal Yisrael. And not only are we told what the individual numbers were, but we're told what the total, sum total was. Not because the Torah didn't think we could add, but because the Torah wanted to tell us both are important. We're important as a collective group. We're important also as individuals. The importance is not only the collective importance, right, which is perhaps the philosophy of communism and socialism, nor is it individual importance alone, which is maybe the, capitalism. But it's a combination of both. The collective importance is important, the individual importance is important. And then each tribe had their special, unique tafkid, okay, and they were together with two other tribes in a different place around the Mishkan, at a different direction where they were, different, we'll get to the orientation, but just one was in the east, and one was in the west, and one was in the south, and one was in the north, okay? And each banner had a different color and a different picture on it. And again, a different location, okay? And who their, which other tribes they were connected with. What was their neighborhood? Who were their neighbors? And all of this added to the individuality of each tribe, okay? And that is the idea of Judaism demands a certain amount of conformity. Everybody has to conform to certain basic principles, mitzvahs, that everybody shares together, because if we don't have that, that's the body of the Torah that's represented by the Mishkan, that's God's presence, that everybody dwells around and uses as their unifying focal point, like Yaakov Kamenetsky says. But after that, everybody can find their niche and their specific color, place, environment, right, perspective, which we'll see in detail in a few seconds, how that individuality is brought out. And that's why the Jewish people wanted very much to be like the angels. What's this idea that the angels had different camps with different banners? It means that each angel was created to serve a certain purpose. The purpose of Gavriel, with strength or whatever, fire, is not the same purpose of Michael. And the same purpose of Michael is not the same purpose of Uriel. And each angel has his group of angels that support his unique tafkid in this world, his unique mission in this world. Angels are created to be different, right? Otherwise you wouldn't need different angels. So when the Jewish people saw that God apportioned out different missions and Memela gave different qualities to different angels so they could fulfill that mission, they also wanted that. We also are like the angels. We also want to serve God individually, not just conforming, everybody doing the same thing, right? We want to have our own individuality, what we contribute uniquely to the common good. And there, that is represented, where is there room for individuality? So he said, first you have to have the conformity, something that unifies you, which is basically the Torah, our service to God, our belief in God, our 13 principles of faith, and the various mitzvahs that apply to all people, all times. Those are the unifying factors. Then there is the place for individuality in Torah. How is that? First, every banner had a different color. Color is a very subjective thing. It represents taste, aesthetics. Everybody can find an individual expression, right, in how they approach those same mitzvahs that everybody else has. Example, right, everybody has the mitzvah of lighting Hanukkah candles. Okay, you have to have a menorah. But what I consider a beautiful, right, menorah that enhances my lighting of the Hanukkah candles may be very different than what you consider a beautiful menorah that enhances your lighting. We're both lighting the same amount of candles, the same time, right, same place, but aesthetically, my menorah is different than yours. I have this modern, you know, looking menorah, and you like a more, archaic looking, probably it's the opposite way, but in any case, the, you know, one of these, I know nothing about art, so it's hard for me to find the words that are proper, but in any case, right, everybody has a different taste in things, and therefore can approach the mitzvahs with their aesthetic taste. That, to a certain degree, is called hither mitzvah, how you beautify the mitzvah. But beauty is in the eyes of the beholder. What I consider beautiful, you may not consider beautiful, and vice versa, right? And so therefore, in my subjective aesthetic approach to the same mitzvahs that everybody else is doing, there's room for individuality in the aesthetic subjective taste in that mitzvah. That's the first thing. That's called the color of the banner. Then everybody has a different picture on their banner, which represents something about the background of that tribe, where they come from, what the major aspect of that tribe was. For instance, on which one do I know? On what's it called? Perhaps on Yosef's banner was sheaves of grain, that Yosef is the provider for the other tribes. What he did in Mitzrayim or whatever, he's the mashbir, the provider. Okay, and other things, right? Reuven was the dudoyim that he brought to his mother, which represented that unique quality that that shevet has. So that's also a way that people can show their individuality, because not all mitzvahs apply to all people equally. There are certain mitzvahs that are only for men, and there are certain mitzvahs that are only for women. So a woman can exhibit her individuality with women's mitzvahs, and men can exhibit their individuality with men's mitzvahs. Farmers have mitzvahs that factory workers don't have, and businessmen have mitzvahs that factory workers and farmers don't have. So based on your profession and your who you are, what you are, right, there are different mitzvahs, right, that put you into a different framework. There are different frameworks of mitzvahs that also let a person exhibit to a certain degree his somewhat individuality. It's all men, all women, all farmers, or whatever, but it's still broken down into individualism. After that, right, every tribe had their mission, what they were supposed to contribute to the Jewish people. Some tribes were supposed to be marines, sailors, some tribes were supposed to be, what's it called, artisans, some tribes were supposed to be Torah learners, some tribes were supposed to be warriors. Each one has their specific mission in serving the Ribbono Shel Olam, in contributing their unique talents, abilities, and capabilities to the good of the klal, of the collective group, and that is represented by each different tribe. In addition, every tribe was in a different location. Location is also important, one in the north, one in the south, and so on, right? Which means that they all had a different perspective of the Mishkan. They were looking from a different perspective. And therefore, even though it was the same Mishkan, but one saw the south side of the Mishkan facing him, and one saw the north side facing him, one saw the east side and the west side, and different perspectives, right, can give a person also different approaches to the same mitzvah. For instance, there is a tremendous argument how a person should react by tkiyah shofar on Rosh Hashanah. Some say that when the shofar blows, you're supposed to be grasped with fear and trepidation and break down crying. And some say that you're supposed to be elated that you're coronating God as the king. Now, they both could be true, but people with different backgrounds or different perspectives can approach the same mitzvah in different ways. They say a joke. The Gemara says that, what's it called? Hillel had 80 students, right? 80 students. The least of them was Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, who knew everything in Torah. He was the least of the students. The greatest was Rabbi Yonasan ben Uziel. He said, what did Rabbi Yonasan ben Uziel, how great was he? That if a bird, when he was learning Torah, flew over his head, it got burnt up from the intense fire of Torah. Okay? They say, well, what about Hillel himself? He said, he was so great that a bird could fly over his head when he was learning Torah and not get burnt up. That's even great. In any case, but that's not the joke. The joke is, so how does a chassid look at this Gemara? Wow. Look at the power of the fire of Torah. It could even consume a bird flying over the head of Yosef Uziel. How does a litvak look at this Gemara? Is he responsible for paying for the bird? Whose bird was it? Is it only a... I don't know who made up this joke, and I'm not sure if I like it or not, but it just brings out the point. Two people can look at the exact same thing from a different perspective and get a different message from the same thing. And both messages are good. So that is the difference of perspective by different location from each of the tribes. And people also have different family backgrounds. They were counted according to their families, okay? And the family background makes it different how you approach mitzvahs also, which mitzvahs you need to put more emphasis on and which ones less emphasis or whatever. And the same thing, everybody has a different, the general family. And then you have a base Abba, which your own individual family. And that brings in heredity. Right? What qualities have you inherited from your parents, from your grandparents? That's called the base av, right? And because you have different different qualities, you have different character traits, right? You need to deal with Torah differently than somebody else with different character traits. Because my character traits may be more sensual, I have to be very careful when it comes to averas that are dependent on sensual things. I have to be extra careful. But you may be, by nature, more intellectual and very cold sensually. So you don't have to go to extremes of protecting yourself from sensual things, but you have to be more careful that you keep your intellect proper. So the things that you have to work on are different than the things I have to work on. So there's also a place for individuality based on our family background and our heredity of what kind of qualities we have, what kind of background we have, makes a very big difference in what we have to emphasize in our Avodas Hashem and what not doesn't have to be emphasized that much. What comes easily or whatever. And that also, what's it called, makes a big difference in what kulas and chumras we have. I may have to be machmir in something because it's my nature is that I have a tendency to drift away in that area. So I have to go extra special and be extra careful and make extra chumras. But you, like we said, may not have the need for those stringencies. You can do what the normative halacha is, not be extra strict, because those areas, for you, being extra strict may be negative, right? Because it's going to push you over the brink where better you should do what you're supposed to do and don't do something more because it's going to be negative for you. And it really depends on your... Somebody just a few minutes ago, an hour ago, one of the young women in the seminary I was teaching, she asked me, she said that she comes from a Yekesha family who are very, careful, exacting, everything has to be done 100% right, and because of that it leads her sometimes to be very nervous and not to be able to live life normally, right? If she has a question, if she's doing something right or not, which is very nice to find out, but sometimes she goes overboard, and even if she asks her father starts looking this and that, and maybe this is it, and all different kinds of doubts and whatever, and she says she becomes almost psychotic from being too careful, right? So she wanted to know what's a happy balance. So for a person like that, it could be that she shouldn't be extra machmer in things because it's going to lead her to negative things, not positive things. But somebody who's more flippant, right, not a yeki, just the opposite, right, for a free living soul, right, who's very hard to be, told what to do and to stick within a framework, that person may have to go to the other extreme and condition himself to become very, very strict. Otherwise, he's going to really go off the path. So every person has their individual framework within their background, their personality, their qualities. All of that goes into making what that person's individual framework has to be vis-a-vis Siogin fences he makes around the Torah that apply to him and may not apply to somebody else, things that he's more lenient in or things that he's more strict in, and deviates from the normative halacha one way or the other, to one extreme or the other. For some people, one extreme is necessary to deviate from the normative halacha to be more machmer or to be more mekel, not to do something wrong. But where there are allowances for leniencies, maybe it's good for you to be lenient and not to do the normative halacha, because in your situation, being lenient will make you serve God better than doing even the normative halacha. And for somebody else, being more strict in that area will be more positive in their service of Hashem, because if they did the normative halacha, it would lead them to negative things. There's another place where there is place for individuality. And also, there's another thing included in family, and that is minhagim, customs. That came family customs. Customs of places where people emanate from, right? Customs of different countries, different ethnic groups within Judaism have their customs that more or less mold themselves and express the neshama of those people. Okay? I'll give you an example. again, I hate these examples because maybe somebody's going to. But in any case, Ashkenazim and Sfaradim, okay, they have a different makeup. They're different neshamas, for sure, no shy. Different personalities. Not you can't make a general rule, all Ashkenazim and all Sfaradim, but in general, there's a difference. It always amazes me, the Sfaradim have, say, slichas from Rosh Chodesh Elul till Yom Kippur, 40 days, every day the same slichas. Ashkenazim don't start slichos till minimum of 4 days before Rosh Hashanah, which leaves 14 days, 15 days, 2 weeks, not 40 days, and every day is a different slichas. Every day something different. Don't repeat the same one twice. Okay? Why? Because Sfaradim, for the most part, okay, are more emotional, and therefore they can do something 40 days in a row, the same thing, and still be, you know, uplifted by it. Ashkenazim are more intellectual, I don't know if that's a bad word, but more less emotional, right? More, I don't know what the word, what a good word is, but in any case, and therefore to do the same thing every day for 40 days would not be a positive thing for most Ashkenazim. So therefore, they have a shorter time, different things every day, and that way, what's it called, it fits their personality to a certain degree. Okay, minhagim are molded and created to express the neshama of the people who have those minhagim. And that's why they're different minhagim from different places and different ethnic groups and whatever. And those also show the individuality. And even certain families have different minhagim. And that makes them also individually unique. And another aspect, who do you associate with? Every tribe had two other tribes that they were on the same direction, the same place that they were located, same location. And those were the tribes that they had the greatest connection to. Those were their neighbors. So who do you associate with also gives you a unique chance to approach Judaism a little bit different than somebody else. Because I have to interrelate with X and Y, where you're interrelating with Z and A, and different people. Right? So it's a different environment, different neighborhood, different friends. So the way that I have to approach mitzvahs or whatever, and Avodas Hashem, may be a little bit different than you because of the influences that I have that may not be bad or good, just different. Okay. With all of this, I think that this also represents our preparation for the re-receiving of the Torah every year. We re-receive the Torah. So we count Sfira. Sfiras HaOmer is an interesting mitzvah. According to many opinions, you can't be motzi somebody in Sfiras HaOmer. You have to do it yourself. Everybody's preparation for Torah is individual, is unique. Nobody can do it for you. You have to do it yourself. It's unique to you. At the same time, we're not counting different days at a different pace. We're all counting the same day at the same time, reaching the goal at the same time, which means that there is both an individual aspect to the preparation for Torah and a collective aspect, and both are important. Just like the collective aspect of the Jewish people is important, and the individual aspect of the Jewish people is important. And that's, I think, another aspect of what it says. The Torah was given through three mediums: Eish, fire, Mayim, water, and Midbar, and the desert. Okay? I think that these three things represent the following. I have many other pshatim on this, but you've got to remember now which one I'm telling now. The water is common to everybody. It tastes the same to everybody. It doesn't have any different taste or whatever. It's tasteless, basically. Water. We have water, and it's pristine. Everybody needs water for the same thing, right? It's not an individual thing. That's the collective aspect of Torah. Torah is like water, okay? It is the foundation of existence of all Jews, of all the world, like water is. And that has no differentiation with individuality. Everybody drinks the same water, same taste, same color, same everything. That's water. Then there is fire. Fire is also used by everybody, the same fire, but people use it for different things. One person uses it for cooking. One person uses it for heating. One person uses it to burn the weeds. One person uses that same fire to make, what's it called, industry, and all different kinds of industry. So it's the same fire, but it can be used in many, many different ways that makes it a individual tool. So there are many things in the Torah that are conformity. Everybody does the same mitzvahs, but like we said, you can have your taste, your individual perspective, right, for the same mitzvah. So it's like fire. It's all the same fire, but how you use it and how you utilize it is different. Fire is not different. And then there's the midbar. The midbar is really a very individual thing. There's no roads. There's no, what's it called? Everybody, when you're in the midbar, that's you make the midbar what you want it. It's your individual place. There's nothing in the midbar that forms you. You form it. You make your path. And that's the things in Judaism where there's total individuality, where everybody has a different derech, a different path in service of Hashem. There's no set paths in those areas, right? There it's a midbar. Everybody makes a path for themselves. Okay? There's no roads. Right? You just start and you move. That's what the midbar, midbar's hefker. Everybody makes the midbar what they want to make out of it. So there are three aspects of Torah. There's the aspects like water, which are common to everybody. Everybody does the same thing, the same way, or whatever, and that's the unifying factors of Torah. Then there is the fire part of Torah, where it's all the same, but how you utilize it is different. And then there's the midbar, where completely different things that people have to be involved in, and chumras, and kulas, and minhagim, or whatever, where it's really a person's unique place in his service of the Ribbono Shel Olam. That's represented by the three things, the water, fire, and the mishpah. Okay, it's Hashem. We understand that, and we understand where we have to conform, and where we can be individuals and not mix those areas in a way that they're not proper. Then, it's Hashem, there's place for every individual in Klal Yisrael, there's place for Klal Yisrael, there's place for different shvatim, different minhagim, different ethnic groups or whatever, and that's what makes Klal Yisrael great, right? The collective strength and the individual contributions towards that collective strength of each person.